At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the magnificent Monday edition of the Yard. Hope you're well wherever you are today. We got a lot to talk about. We got a lot to feel good about. We really do. And we're going to talk about that today because here's the deal. Life is too short to live without happiness. It's true. Life is short. Death is certain. It's great when the things that you place your emotional energy in reap some type of benefit for you. You know, let's be honest about that. The fall semester wasn't a great semester for Mississippi State sports. It really wasn't. Football, obviously losing record, ended the bowl streak. It sucked. It did. You hated it for the kids, but you hated it for our fans because we're always here. No matter who graduates, we're still here. We're riding the tide, up and down, ebb and flow, positive, negative. It's true. It's what we do. Men's basketball didn't win an NCAA tournament game. It's disappointing. Women didn't make the tournament. But now here we are, spring semester. It's finals week in Starkville. And to all of you students out there working through finals, best of luck. Study. Get some rest. All those all-night cramming sessions are really a result of your lagging, right? But you do what you got to do. Once you enjoy your college experience, but also make good grades, I can tell you as the father of 3 college graduates and 1 freshman at Mississippi State now, it never, ever, ever leaves your mind, right? You always hope your kids are doing well. You always hope they're doing what they're supposed to be doing because it's different. You know, in high school, you'd get a call from a teacher. You know, nowadays, if something's not right, you get a letter from, the registrar. You know, and so it's a different deal. And because they're not minors anymore, they're not so willing to talk to you. It is what it is. But nevertheless, best of luck on your finals. Because once we get through this week, it's all sports for the rest of the spring and early in the summer. So students, take care of business. Don't just write it off and say, oh, it's too hard or this professor is a jerk or whatever. No, you're responsible for yourself. If you didn't take good notes, you got nobody to blame but you. Oh, but Steve, his class is so boring. Well, then ought to be easy. Right? Because interesting classes are always the most challenging. And so you're more likely to take good notes. You know, it's like it always seems like it's so funny to me, kid will make an A in, organic chemistry or calculus 4, but then get a C- in speech. You know, it makes any sense to me. So apply yourselves. Get your education. It's not just about getting a grade. It's about learning a skill, acquiring some knowledge. It makes you, a better member of our workforce. It's not just about your employment. It's about the good of everybody. I need you to buckle down. Because at some point, I'm going to retire. I'm going to be dependent on you folks to run the country. I need you to be well-educated. So we love you. We wish you the best. And on behalf of your parents, again, don't be hanging out in the Cotton District until after finals are over. Some of you already done. Good luck with your summer. But hey, I want to tell you this too. We don't talk about softball a lot on this show, but man, the job that Samantha Ricketts and Tyler Bratton and Josh, the whole crew have done there is amazing. Those ladies have handed out a 6-pack of Shut Up to everybody that needed it. I don't know if you remember this. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. When the preseason softball polls came out, the coaches preseason poll. So this isn't just like a bunch of media folks or some blogger out there, and there's so much of that that you guys give way too much credit to. But the SEC coaches voted Mississippi State dead last in the Southeastern Conference. Only 13 of 14 schools play softball. Vandy doesn't play. I guess they couldn't find the place to build a diamond. I don't know. But nevertheless, only 13 SEC schools play softball. Your Bulldogs got the fewest number of points in the balloting, 19. The only school even within striking distance of us was Ole Miss, who actually finished last in the conference. Now, your Bulldogs have put together an amazing year. There's even some talk, too, maybe win a game or two in a tournament could be in the hosting conversation. And wouldn't that be some apples, right? But it's so interesting to go back and look because, as I've said on this show many times, anybody can make a list, even the SEC coaches. Anybody can make a list. And sometimes we get too emotionally invested in these lists and we start thinking, well, yeah, I guess we're going to be terrible again. The Mississippi State softball ladies, sixth. That's right, sixth in the NCAA tournament or SEC tournament bracket. How about that? Again, a six-pack of shut up to their critics. I'm very proud of these ladies. I went to the preseason little media gathering. Me and Dana went, got to swing the bat a little bit. Got to talk to Coach Ricketts. So impressed with her, too. Because, and I'll tell you this, too. One of the things that I like about Coach Ricketts is she has an edge to her. Now, she's a really nice person. But you can see, like, just under the surface, this is probably not somebody that you want to mess with. I mean, that's just kind of the vibe that she gets. Not that she's a mean or nasty person, but she's the kind of person that if you start betting against her, you're probably going to lose money. That's just kind of how it feels and looks being around her. And I'm excited to see what is to come. And so the SEC tournament actually gets underway tomorrow. And that'll be the first game. Game one is between Kentucky and Ole Miss, the 12 and 13 seeds in a loser leaves town match. And I can assure you both of those teams are, you know, probably ready for this thing to be over. They can say what they want to, but they know what they're up against. And my how the mighty have fallen. I remember when, you know, back when our friends at Ole Miss, those of you that have them, kind of poo-pooed on Mississippi State's women's basketball success. It's, oh, it's women's sports. Do you know how that sounds? Well, it's just a women's sport. Guys, I respect and love and admire every student athlete, regardless of the sport, the gender, whatever you want to call it. I love all Bulldogs. I know most of you are like me. I have my preferences. But you know what? When I see what this softball team has done compared to what they were expected to do, it makes me awfully proud. It does. I know it does you too. I love when Mississippi State proves the quote experts wrong. Now, we'll have an opportunity to do that. Wednesday, May 8th is when the big day is. I mean, you got four games on Wednesday and Thursday. But you know, Wednesday is a big one. You got LSU and Alabama in the early game. And you got Missouri versus the winner of Kentucky Ole Miss. Georgia gets Auburn and then Mississippi State in game five. The last game of the day on Wednesday will take on South Carolina. We'll spend a few minutes kind of previewing that on the Wednesday show. We'll kind of keep you updated here. Now, in the event that the Bulldogs should win, and we should, then we would go play Texas A&M in the quarterfinals. And then on the same side of the bracket of us is number two Florida. You know, so if you advance, you know, nobody gets to the championship game by accident. You got to beat some good teams. But awfully proud of Coach Ricketts, the whole crew. Wanted to open the show with that, man. I do, because I know sometimes we get caught up talking about the, quote, big three. But these ladies deserve our support. They absolutely do. And what a great, great, great season that we've had so far. And everything before today has prepared us for this. This is what you play for, the opportunity to go to the SEC tournament and have a good seating and then be in a good position for an NCAA tournament regional somewhere. And what road regional, whatever, I don't think there's a lot of people out there that want to find, like when their brackets are announced, I don't think there's a lot of people out there that are going to want to see Mississippi State, even if we end up being a two seed. Like, ugh, hate that. Yeah, hate that. That's a team that's, you know, stacked up a lot of top 25 wins this year, and they've spent much of the year in the top 25. So awfully proud of our softball ladies. Now, men's tennis headed to the Sweet 16, headed to Columbus, Ohio. They win the Starkville Regional over the weekend. They'll head up there to Ohio State. Hey, it's a tall order. But I don't know if we talk about men's tennis enough either. I mean, we talk about a program with some level of consistency. That's one right there. You know, hey, we've got, in the last several years, we've had a couple of SEC tournament championships. And a chance to do some big things this year, for sure. If we're able to go through the Midwest Territory and take care of the Buckeyes, you got a chance up there to do some unprecedented things. How cool was that? Women's golf arrived in North Carolina today. They're a number four seed in that region up there. Play is ongoing now. That's your SEC champion, Mississippi State women's golf team, right? The men's side, they also make a regional. They'll be a number seven seed next week at Purdue. So, yeah, a lot of postseason action here for your spring sports. And, of course, the Diamond Dogs kind of trending in that same direction. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this weekend series against Alabama. It was good. Had a chance to be great. It was really good. Let's just kind of call it for what it is. It was a really good weekend for us and a really good week for State. 3-1 on the week. And now ranked as a consensus top 15 team. There's a lot of things that I could say. My ego would probably want to suggest, you know, some things that I'm not going to say. But I'm not going to. Because I believe we're all Bulldogs, and no matter where you came down in the preseason with your hot takes, the bottom line is Mississippi State is winning, and that's what we should all want. I don't think that's always the case. I think some people get so incredibly invested in their own narrative, they would rather be right, even at the expense of Mississippi State for low internet cred. It's true. And it's so funny, like even yesterday, like we lose yesterday, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, we've got people coming out of woodwork again. I mean, forget the fact that we won a series and we beat Ole Miss and we went 3-1 in a week. You know, listen, I get it. When we lose, I'm disappointed. But you can't be a prisoner of the moment. You got to look at the big picture. You do. You have to look at the big picture. But there's some people, it's like, hey, I'm not going to, hey, we beat Ole Miss, I got nothing to say. We 10-run rule Ole Miss, Alabama on Friday, I got nothing to say. We spank Alabama on Saturday to take series 8-1, I got nothing to say. We lose on Sunday, I got a lot to say, right? How do you expect to be taken seriously? Really? I mean, honestly, why should anyone put any stock in what you have to say when the only time you say it is when something bad happens to Mississippi State? You won't celebrate the wins with us, but you want to pick apart the losses. And so that's not a Mississippi State problem. That's a you problem. It is. And the people that love you just are, you know, too nice to say it. I'll say it. I'll tell you. You're part of the problem. And it's like we look at the steps that we've taken to turn this program around and the results that these young men are producing for us on the field. And rather than be excited about that and say, you know what, hey, the bottom line is this, Steve, I just want Mississippi State to win. But now all of a sudden, you know, we talk about my ego. There's other people whose egos are involved. And it's like, oh, and listen, I'm around some of these people. I see how miserable they are. And you forecast failure, and you forecast failure, you forecast failure. And all of a sudden, you don't get the payoff on that. Because it's all a coping mechanism, right? It's like, well, if we win, I'm happy. But if we lose, I can come back and say, I told you so. Well, I could sit here and tell you I feel like this is going to be a solid number two in the NCAA tournament before the season even began. So I will. I will. And we got some more games left to win. But at the end of the day, it's not about who's right or who's wrong. It's about the Mississippi State Bulldogs. It's about the Bulldogs kind of returning to form. But the Bulldogs getting back to the NCAA tournament. And I, again, like our softball team, if we end up being a two seed, which is still a very good possibility, we still have the opportunity to play our way into a one and host. That's still there. But if we end up as a two, I don't think there's anybody in the country that's going to be overjoyed to find out that Mississippi State and their fans who travel well are going to come take over our stadium as a two seed. I don't think anybody wants that. I know what I want. I want some Bulldog Burger Company. Not going to get it today. Since we don't have a midweek game this week, I may get it tomorrow or Wednesday. But I'm going to enjoy some Bulldog Burger Company this week. I love Bulldog Burger Company. I have been a fan of theirs long before they were a fan of mine. Again, I think me and Brian Haydad were probably among the first, I don't know, 100 customers to go in there, 200 maybe. We went from the very beginning, and even then when they were working out the kinks, I think both of us walked away and said, you know what? This place is going to make it. You know, the selections of the menu are outstanding, and they're always kind of updating that to kind of keep it fresh. So, you know, if you're a Bulldog Burger Company regular, you go in there and you get something that maybe you don't always get. And always ask about the specials, because there's some things they try out some specials before they put them on the menu. It's true. Those great restaurant quality hamburgers we've become so familiar with, they always hit the spot. Now sometimes maybe you're thinking, I'm not quite hungry enough for one of those hamburgers because the portions are so substantial. Let me recommend the Sloppy Joe sliders or the Chicken Bacon Ranch sliders. Maybe you don't want to eat quite as heavy, get the BLT salad. I prefer it grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not judging. You get it the way you want it. I get mine grilled with a healthy helping of ranch dressing. I do. I love that salad there. Probably my favorite salad in the country. And when I leave, I always try to get the chocolate shake to go. I'm probably a Nutella fan more than anything else, but when they have those special shakes, I always get them because it's a limited time only type thing, right? I was like, oh, you know what? If I don't get it now, I may never get it. So I like to try those things. And remember years ago, we did the banana shake. How cool was that? I recommended that on the show. It's like, hey, let's do a banana shake. And we did the Jordan Westberg banana shake. I don't think they could put his name on it, but it was incredible. Wish they'd bring it back. It's great. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. Make it part of your beauty care regimen because they will make you and everybody around you better looking. Right? Bulldog Burger Company, a place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. And if you can't tell my voice, I'm feeling better. I may still sound a little nasally, but I feel good. I do. I feel good. Even though we lost yesterday, I feel good. Had a good weekend. And, you know, one of the things that I do, as I'm pulling up my notes here, one of the things that I do when I am sick, and maybe you do the same thing, and it really doesn't matter what the sickness is, and I'm not asking for an endorsement or any advertising or whatever. I drink a lot of Gatorade. I really do. Because, you know, staying hydrated is an important part of the deal. And so even though that I'm, you know, probably 90% right now, I'm still drinking Gatorade. Still got to get those electrolytes, get some hydration. Yeah, it's one thing. When you get sick, you know, sometimes you don't feel like eating and drinking much. But Gatorade always goes down smooth. It does. Got to force yourself to eat a little bit too. You got to have fuel for the fight, man. You can't just lay around feeling bad for yourself. Last night, too, I watched another part of the Bon Jovi documentary. I'm almost done with that. It's on Hulu. It's well done. It's called Thank You and Good Night. It's interesting. You know, they do little flashbacks and things like that. And last night, I saw the part about the 89 VMAs when Richie and John got up there and sang Wanted Dead or Alive. Right in the middle of the John Bon Jovi Blaze of Glory thing, which was super cool. I remember when that album dropped, a lot of people thought, well, this may be the end of Bon Jovi. It wasn't. But I think it kind of legitimized John Bon Jovi in many respects. But I also have Stranger in This Town. I think I've both done a Richie Sambora solo albums. I know I've got Stranger in This Town. And Ballad of You is really good, too. And In It for Love. It's great, 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 great songs. All right, let's talk a little Alabama baseball here. Now, as you guys recall, I expected to win the series. I hoped we would sweep, but I didn't pick us to sweep. And we didn't. But I would have loved to have been wrong. And honestly, when I got up on Sunday, I thought, you know what? These guys don't have any chance. We got it. We didn't. But thankfully, we took the first two games. And it's like, and we talk about this all the time. It's like when you don't win on Sunday, no matter how the rest of the weekend goes, it kind of puts a damper on things. I mean, it really does. And then you kind of, the emotion of the disappointment kind of fades a little bit. And you're like, okay, we took care of business. We didn't do everything we wanted to do. We did what we had to do. That was really the case last week. We needed to beat Ole Miss. We did. We needed to win the series against Alabama. We did. And we knocked their ace all over the yard, Greg Ferrall. And the guy, again, that had give the kid some credit, man. A guy that started out as a midweek pitcher and ends up pitching on Friday nights due to some injuries. But we got after him. And I give Jay Gautreaux a lot of respect, too, because we were clearly prepared. And I don't know if you went and looked at Verone's splits, but, like, he dominated an Ole Miss lineup in Oxford. And so it kind of felt like, you know, he's beginning to kind of peak as a pitcher. He'd been really good in conference play. And then Mississippi State knocks him around the yard. He matches a season high in runs and sets a new high in hits against, if memory serves me correct. But nevertheless, Mississippi State, great success. And it started pretty early here. And I thought Cal was good. Again, you know, they got in a little trouble there in the fifth. But let's just kind of run it back here. All right, top of one. Miller flies out the center. Petrucci singles up the middle. And LeBron, who really, really good, really impressed. Mark Etheridge told me the kid's going to be a star. After watching him for three games, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. I think Justin LeBron is an excellent player. Be curious to see if he elects to stay at Alabama. Will Hodo, a neighbor, a friend of ours from Waynesboro, Mississippi, right? If you live in that neck of the woods, you know what good people the Hodos are, but he strikes out swinging. All right, bottom of one, Bryce Chance singles to right field. And Bryce, you know, the first weekend leading off, again, a tough luck weekend. This weekend, better results from Bryce. And, you know, again, the most difficult hitter to strike out in the Southeastern Conference. That's a guy top of your order right now. Mershon then has the fielder's choice there. They force Bryce at second. They walk DJ, and this was a great at-bat for DJ. Didn't hit a home run, didn't get an RBI, didn't blister one off the wall, but he gets down 0-2 in this count and then doesn't chase the breaking ball out of the zone. That's been an issue at times. Really disciplined approach here. Doesn't hit into double play, just lets them walk him. Gets down 0-2, and then they walk him on four consecutive pitches following that. So good at-bat, mature approach. Wild pitch since both guys second and third, and you're thinking, we just got to get a productive out of here, and we got a lead. And Hunter Hines says, how about a super productive out, base hit with no out attached to it? It's a three-run bomb of center field. And it was a little farther at the yard than McCants made it look. It's true. But it's 3-0, and you feel like with Cal Steven on the mound, goodness, this might be enough. Right? That's kind of how it felt at the time. Obviously, you want to keep tacking on, but you start thinking, if we got three in the first, we're not going to end up chasing the game here. With Cal out there on the bump, got a really good chance to win this ball game. Turns out we did, with a lot of room to spare. Hizak then flies out to right center, and Larry strikes out looking. Takes three strikes. That's not a good AB. It's not. All right, top of the second. Cal does what all great pitchers need to do. When you get separation, you got to get a clean inning. They go 1-2-3. Snell flies out to left. McCants strikes out swinging on three pitches, all of them swinging. And then Gassetti flies out to right field. So now we're right back to work in bottom of second. Logan Kohler, who proved to be the he-man of the weekend, flies out to center here. Then Ethan Pulliam, another quality at-bat from a young guy, works the count full, fouls the ball off, gets a pitch, doesn't chase it, and gets a walk to kind of get us going. Johnny Long grounds out the shortstop, the only play is the first. So Pulliam advances to second. Then they hit Bryce. So Bryce is on base first two plate appearances. Mershon then singles to left field. Pulliam comes around to score. It's 4-0, and then DJ strikes out swinging. Again, lengthy at bat here. We get down 1-2 in this count. We work it full, and we end up chasing a slider. I'm sure he was looking for a fastball there. And we end up chasing it, so we get out of it. But again, a good at-bat there. Not a good result, but a good at-bat. Good approach. All right, top of third, slide strikes out swinging. Eblen lines out the first. And I tell you this, Hunter Hines, where has he gone defensively? It's incredible. He doesn't even look like the same player. Making diving stops, overhead catches. He just has a much better understanding of the position. And these days, anything hit over there, I expect him to make a play. He does here. Millward then gets an infield single. And then Petrucci singles to center field. Now I got runners on the corners and two outs. And Cal does what great pitchers do. strike out swinging here to get out of it. You strand both runners. So two hits in the inning, but Alabama can't push one across. Bottom of third, State again attacks on. And it's so difficult to come from behind when people keep putting logs on the fire. You just get smothered. So State with three in the first, and now one in the second, and then right back to work here in the third. And it's Hunter Hines on the very first pitch, hits an absolute Ruthian blast to right field to make it 5-0. Hyzak and single, Sharp with you to right side, and then Larry's hit by the pitch, I think for the 16th or 17th time. It's crazy. Coward then flies out, kind of a pop-up out there to short left. The runners can't advance. And lo and behold, they say, you know what, hey, feel bad for you guys. Let me just balk these guys in a scoring position for you. They do. Pulliam then strikes out swinging. And one of our base running blunders of the weekend. And like you guys, and it's so interesting, people like, you know, Steve, you should go in there and interrogate Lemonis about this. Guys, it pisses me off too. You know, I'm a baseball guy. I hate watching bad baseball. Even when we're winning, you have to play clean baseball. So Johnny Long, an amazing at bat here, right? Amazing. Gets down 1-2 in this count, fights it off, gets a pitch he can handle, and he pulls one, looks like it's destined for left field, and LeBron lays out for it, makes an amazing stop, if not two-run score. Imani Larry gets caught. They throw behind as Larry has kind of leaked down the line a little bit there. And listen, people are like, well, that's on the coach. Guys, it's on everybody. It's on everybody. And most of our base running blunders have been player generated, right? And that's the thing, too. These are veteran players, right? And listen, guys are going to make some mistakes. They do. It didn't hurt us here, but it hurt us on Sunday. We're going to get to that a little bit here. But you can't give away outs. You want all your outs to be at the plate. You don't want to give outs away in the field. You don't want to do that. When you're on the base pass, the pressure is on them. Don't give them a chance to breathe. Could have been a really big inning there. We get two. Now it's a 6-0 ball game. But again, you certainly hate to get an out on a base hit. You get an RBI base hit, and you got to think they need to have runners on the corners with the top of the order coming up. And Bryce Chance got it to reach base in back-to-back plate appearances. So, yeah, even in a game like this, it matters. You can't, again, give Joe Moorhead some credit. We can't accept in victory what we would not accept in defeat. True story. All right, top four. Hodo walks, and then Snell strikes out looking. McCann strikes out swinging again, and then Gusetti lines out to center field. So we work around the leadoff walk there, and it's a 6-0 game. And again, now you really feel like this game is probably over. You can never assume anything, but you feel like, you know, with Cal Steven on the bump, six runs a lot to overcome, truly. Well, Mississippi State decided, you know what, we're going to give Cal plenty of margin here. Bottom of four, Bryce Chance homers to left center. It's 7-0. And Bryce, if you told me at the beginning of the year Bryce is going to have five home runs, I wouldn't have believed it. Bryce is really a doubles guy. But he has shown surprising power and has hit some big home runs when we've needed him. That's it for Ferron. And I'll be honest with you, you could tell in his body language, even in the third, he was ready to come out of the game. And Coach Vaughn and those guys, you got a decision to make right there. As we talk about on the show, if I'm going to lose game one, I want to know as soon as possible. Well, we let them know. Yeah, we let them know. And so they basically bring in Buchanan to come basically mop up. It's a 7-0 ball game. And I'm already thinking, got a chance to mercy rule these boys. Mershon greets Buchanan with a single through the right side. Another quality at bat there, just hitting it where it is, right? And then Jordan walks, and then Hines walks. And you start thinking, my goodness, man, get it together. Well, then Hyzak is hit by the pitch, and the fact that they didn't even get anybody up tells you that it's a white flag. Then Imani Larry says, I'll take your white flag and see you with the victory flag, and it's a grand slam to left field. Made it a 12-0 ball game, and I can tell you this, the air in the building changed. We were already feeling good, but after that grand slam, number one, we needed those additional runs, but number two, people love Imani. Even when he struggled a little bit leading off, people love this guy. They do. And you're happy to see him have some success at the plate. And again, it gave us enough margin here, but we weren't going to have to go eat up arms to get through the weekend. And Alabama's probably thinking the same thing. Guys, it's 12-0 in the fourth. We may throw our left fielder. You know, we're not going to throw anybody else. Coar then flies out to center. Pulliam grounds out to short. Long flies out to right. And again, you look at that too, right? Even the three outs, pretty loud.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I really feel like, you know, with enough time, we could have probably put 20 on the board. All right, top of five, we let them get back in it, and I thought this was going to prolong the game here. And it's like, I don't know, maybe because he sat too long, lost a little bit of focus, not sure. But Cal kind of had an inning that's kind of, you know, not in his character. Slide singles to right, Eplin then singles to right center. That moves a runner around to third, and it's an RBI sack fly. It's 12-1. And then you think, okay, no harm done. Well, then we walk Petrucci on four pitches. LeBron doubles to right center. Another run is home. And then Hodo walks. And then Snell singles to center field. Run scores. Makes it 12-3. McCants fouls out to Johnny. And then Gossetti reaches on the fielder's choice as we force the runner there at third. But again, you know, it's one thing to give up hits, but you know, all of a sudden you start walking people. So you know, you had, you know, four hits in the inning and a couple of walks. You're going to give up runs in that situation. There's no questions about it. That's going to be the case. You're going to give up runs when that happens. All right, bottom of the fifth. First time Bulldogs don't score in the ballgame. Top of the order up two. Chance grounds out to third. Marshawn grounds out to second. DJ then beats it out here, and then there's a throwing error. Allows him to go all the way around to third base. They walk Hines intentionally, and why would you not? Hizak then flies out to reasonably deep center field. Inning's over. All right, top of six. You know, this game, for all intents and purposes, is over, should be over. Gavin Black comes in, thought it was a great decision. Number one, he has a very dynamic fastball. He also needs some work. He's a guy that could help us on the back end, especially if we get into a regional. It also saves some of our more proven arms for the remainder of the weekend. He gets slide to strike out swinging. Eplin lines out to second. Miller, little slow chopper out to third. Then we magnify our issue here by hitting the next hitter on a 1-2 count. But we bounce back, get down 3-0 to LeBron, and you're thinking they're fixing to make this game interesting. But instead, he looks at strike one, strike two, fouls one back, and then strikes out swinging on a slider. So Black works out of a little self-induced jam there. Bottom of six. State scores again. Larry singles to the left side. Good to see him have a good night. Coar then singles to right field, pushing Larry to second. Wild pitch sends Larry to third. Reads it in the dirt there. Coar doesn't take off there. Pulliam flies out to center field. It's an RBI sack fly. Makes it 13-3. Johnny Long then singles to the left side. Pushes Coar to second. And then they bring in Caden Snell, the DH, to pitch for Buchanan. And he gets Chance to ground into a double play on the very first pitch. All right, top of seven. Ends up being the last half inning of this ball game. Hodo singles up the middle. Then Snell lines out to left. McCants goes down swinging. And then we get Gossetti on four pitches to end the ball game. So 13-3 winners, and you're feeling good about life. Because not only have you won the game, but you knocked Alabama's ace around the yard a little bit. And I don't care who you are or where you're from. When your ace goes out there and gets hit like that, it affects the mental psyche of your team. State with 13 hits in the ballgame. 13 runs, very efficient offensive night. All nine Bulldogs reached base. Eight of them had hits. Also had 13 RBI. Fairly well distributed. Offensive performance, Hunter Hines, four RBIs. Imani Larry, of course, with four as well. And then, again, Cal Stevens, 7-3. Five innings pitched, seven hits, three runs. Scattered those seven hits for the most part. and then three walks. So not a great performance from Cal, but a winning performance from Cal. And then Gavin goes out there and gets a final six outs without a lot of trepidation. But again, I thought we managed this game pretty well. And so 1-0 is the series record after that. All right, we get into game two here, and with Gerangelo on the hill, we always feel like we have a chance to win. We think that's a really, really potent 1-2 punch. This is another ball game too, where I thought Bulldogs played it really well offensively. All right, 1-2-3 inning. Well, not really. We face the minimum in the first. Miller is out, first base to pitcher. Petrus is hit by the pitch, and that was the thing too. Gerangelo did not have his best stuff. He actually hit three hitters in the ball game. But with a man on, he gets Justin LeBron to ground into a double play on an 0-2 count. So again, you face three hitters. Wasn't a 1-2-3 inning, but you did face the minimum. State goes 1-2-3 in the first. Chance lines out, Marshawn grounds out, Jordan strikes out swinging after a lengthy at bat there. Actually worked that account full. I just have a feeling Dakota's about to go on the run again. I feel it, because I think we're seeing even the outs are productive at bats. They're competitive. All right, top of second, Snell strikes out swinging. Gassetti's hit by the pitch. Again, here we go. We get Eblen to strike out swinging. Hameter, a replacement guy, because he didn't play on Friday. As you guys are well aware now, there was about a food poisoning that struck the Alabama roster. And they only had, I think, 18 players available on Saturday. So they had to move some guys around. And the 7-8-9 hitters were all reserves. Hameter singles to left. Pushes a runner to third, and then Portera pops up to the catcher. All right, bottom of second, Hines strikes out swinging. Hizak flies to right. Larry walks, and then Larry's picked off. And, you know, again, here we go. You know, another base running situation here. And it's a situation, too. I know sometimes you got to take a gamble. It didn't work out as well here for us. All right, top of third, Grant, a senior, that at the time was hitting 200, hits an absolute tank to center field, makes it a 1-0 ball game. Gerangelo comes back, strikes out Miller. We get a ground to first, pitch to the pitcher, where Gerangelo covers to give us two outs. LeBron singles to center field. And I don't know, kind of gets a little bit discombobulated here. Snell singles to short. We thought we had the runner forced at second. We challenged the call. I didn't think there was enough to overturn it. The call stands, that it is what it is. But then Gassetti lines out to center field. So again, Alabama scores and a chance to get more. We denied them that opportunity. They do get three hits in the inning. Bottom of third, Kohler opens up with a double to center field. That's always nice. Pulliam grounds out to third. Runner has to hold. Long flies out to second. Runner has to hold. Chanson singles back up the middle and scores Kohler. And then Dave Marchand hit probably his beefiest home run of the year. That thing was deep into the lounge. Two more runs scored. Now it's a 3-1 ball game in favor of State. Jordan strikes out looking, but again, a lengthy at bat here. You know, not going down on three or four pitches. But State a 3-1 lead here, top of four. And again, Gerangelo still just doesn't have the best stuff. We get a ground out to third after a lengthy at bat. Hameter again singles through the right side. And then Portera's hit by the pitch. We're in trouble, right? Two men on, less than two outs. We get Grant to foul out to left. Nice play here by Bryce Chance. And then we get Miller to strike out swinging. And that's the leadoff hitter, Gage Miller, who didn't play on Sunday. Alabama's leading hitter from the junior college ranks of Alabama. All right, bottom of four, Hunter Hines walks, lengthy at bat here, goes to second on a wild pitch. Hizak, infield single to the shortstop. On the play, Hunter takes thirds. Now, runners on the corners with less than two outs, you feel like we got to get a run home here. Even a double play ball gets us a run. Amani Larry comes through, does a job. Sack fly, RBI, Hines tags and scores. Makes it 4-1. Kohler then goes down swinging. Pulliam flies out the right field. And that's the inning. And then Gerangelo seemed to find something. You know, it's like we've kind of been nip and tuck and, you know, he had a situation, the contact came out. I thought it may have been a blister, but it wasn't. But top of five, 1-2-3 inning. Petrus flies out to right. LeBron goes down swinging on three pitches. And then Snell lines out to left field. And then Bulldogs right back to work in the fifth. Long grounds out to second, Chance grounds out to short, and then Mershon comes through with a two-out base hit. Jordan then walks. Again, he didn't make a lot of highlights this weekend, but again, some pretty good at-bats. Mershon steals third, and then Hines grounds out to first unassisted. But again, a little bit of a two-out rally there. We just couldn't get the big base knock to get that run home. Top of six, and again, Gerangelo, very efficient here. Lengthy at-bat for Gassetti, but he gets him to fly out, wins the war there, and then immediately gets Eplin at a single through the left side on the very first pitch. But Hamiter strikes out swinging, and then Portera flies out to center. So we get around that one-out single. Bottom of six, and in many respects, this is where State kind of put this game away. They bring in Fay in place of Adams, make some changes defensively out there, and this is when, like, the heat kind of got to some of those guys battling that food poisoning. I admire them for trying to gut it out. I really do. But it's a tough situation. Hizak greets Fay with a single through the left side and then takes second on a pass ball. Larry, ground ball. He's out at first, but Hizak moves over to third. So, really, you know, you take advantage of the mistakes here, but good job of moving runners. A productive out. Colwer then singles through the left side, chasing a run home, makes it 5-1. Nate Chester hits for Ethan Pulliam. There was a lot of concern about Pulliam earlier in this ballgame. Attempt to bunt. They initially called it no attempt. However, the ball hit the bat, hit the bill of his helmet, and then struck his cheek and left the bruise. They did an x-ray. It was negative. It's just a bruise. He's back in lineup on Sunday. Tough kid. I mean, after what we saw against Vanderbilt, you know, you hate it. It kind of makes you wince a little bit. You hate it for any kid to go down like that. But Chester takes over in the AB and strikes out looking. And, you know, just kind of a tough deal. All right. So we have this whole deal here where we steal and Logan Kohler doesn't slide in a second. In my estimation, he was safe anyway. However, there wasn't enough to overturn the call. But the reality of this, if Logan Kohler slides here, there's no question that he's safe. So, bad base running. Let's just kind of call it for what it is. We can talk about officiating, but the bottom line is you go in sliding there, there's no question. You can't just go in there and expect to just walk up there like it's T-ball. And then we have some craziness here because the crew has to stop the game because they've lost the count. Now, the strike zones are bad enough this weekend. One of the worst weekends I think we've had, even in a winning weekend. I thought the strike zones were all over the place. And then we lose the count. That's embarrassing. It absolutely is. And you say, well, they got it right. You know, the guys that are instructed to officiate the game should always have it right. I understand they're human beings. I get that. But the bottom line is this. They let Johnny Long walk on a three-ball count. They bring him back, and then lo and behold, he singles through the shortstop, and a run scores to make it 6-1. So it actually worked out in State's favor. And then Bryce lines out to center field on a 2-0 count. But it's a 6-1 ball game now headed to the seventh. And again, Gerangelo. I mean, just all of a sudden, once we got through the third, fourth, he kind of found something. Grant strikes out looking. Swinney strikes out looking. And then Petrus doubles down the third baseline, and they went out to go get him. And he told Justin Parker, I'm not coming out of the game. He stays in. He gets LeBron to line out. So he finishes again and goes seven complete in a 6-1 ball game. They bring in Morris to replace Fay, and the very first thing he does is he hits Mershon by the pitch on a 1-2 count. They pull. It's so crazy. They had opportunities, I guess, in this ball game, but they didn't use a lot of premium arms and wanted to save them for Sunday. Paid off for them. Jordan flies out to right. Hines pops up to short, and Hizak pops up to third. Top of eight, we bring in Tyler Davis. Some people criticize this decision. I support the decision. Gerangelo was done. You got six outs to get. It's only a 6-1 ball game. This is when he comes in. Like I've seen people say, well, he came in, you know, we're already up 8-1. No, we were up 6-1. We're up 6-1. You score a couple runs here in the eighth, all of a sudden it's an entertaining ninth. You bring in Tyler Davis because we're trying to get the game over. And you still got plenty of arms to go in the bullpen. You bring in a back in the bullpen guy here, and he walks the bases loaded and gives up a double, and next thing you know, it's a 6-4 ball game. It's maybe a different discussion today. You play to win today's game, and that's what we did. 1-2-3 inning, we get Vaughn to fly out to left. Gassetti pops up to second. And then Elvin pops up to second. So We only got three more outs left to get. State tax on here in the eighth. Larry flies out to right. Kohler, home run, 7-1. Chesterton grounds out to third. Long walks, and then Bryce Chance doubles to left center to drive a run home. Mershon grounds out to second, but it's an 8-1 ball game now going to the ninth. Hammeter doubles down the right field line to open the inning, and then TD's like, okay, that's enough. Portera flies out to center. Grant grounds out to short, and then Swinney flies out to right. And that's your ball game. Hit the ball well, though. 8-1 ball game, and State wins and secures the series season series against Alabama for the eighth consecutive year, or eighth consecutive try. We didn't play in 2020. You got to go all the way back in 2015 to find the year when Alabama beat Mississippi State. And if you don't remember anything about that 2008 year, it was absolutely abysmal. Girangelo now 7-1 on the year. Again, allows a hit per. Goes, you know, seven hits, seven innings pitched, but just the one run. Eight strikeouts, no walks, but the three hit by pitches. And a couple of those were in advantage counts. Tyler Davis goes two innings, allows one run, or excuse me, one hit. No runs, no walks, no strikeouts. And threw just 22 pitches. I mean, I guess in a pinch we could have brought him back, but why would you want to? But now State's won the series, and we're thinking about a sweep. And a sweep was not to be. Let's run the game down real quick. Now, when I got there, I got there a little bit early because I wanted to kind of see how things looked. You know, they had a lot more players available. Of course, McCants was back. Miller did not come back out. And give Alabama a lot of credit. It had been really easy to say, you know what, this thing is over. And give that coaching staff and the team a lot of credit for coming out ready to fight. True story. And Brooks Auger, you know, a good first inning here. LeBron strikes out swinging, hitting leadoff in this ballgame. And Petrus walks on four pitches. Snell grounds out the second. Hodo grounds out the short. So not a single ball hit out of the infield. And you feel like, okay, we had that one-out walk, but we kind of got around it. But it didn't feel like Brooks was really sharp here. The one thing that I would say, three of the four hitters he faced, he got ahead with a swinging strike. And so there's no reason right here that you would think, oh, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have it. An effective inning. All right, bottom of the first. Chance flies out to center field. Mershon walks and still second. So now you got a runner in scoring position, less than two outs with three and four coming up. DJ pops up a 2-0 count to second. Runner can't advance. And then Hines flies out in the short left. So not really, you know, what you'd expect there. A couple pop-ups, so we don't get the run home. Top of second. And as my friends in Red Banks, Mississippi would say, our buddy Brooks Auger has kind of had a come apart here. And it happens sometimes. It does. So we get behind Gassetti, and we hit him by the pitch. McCants, we get ahead of him 0-1, get into a 1-2 count, and it's a single to first base. Gassetti comes around to third. This is a ball that could have easily been ruled an error. I would have recorded an error, to be honest with you. It goes off of Hines into right field, which enables a runner to take third. Now Hammeter walks. The bases are loaded, and Hammeter walks on four pitches. And so mindful here, two of the three first hitters you see, you get behind here, and you didn't throw a strike to either one, right? Eblen then grounds out the first, a run scores. And then Grant homers down the right field line, makes it a 4-0 ball game. Well, we got guys running the bullpen now, right? We actually had some guys run down there after the Hammeter walk. And I've seen some people say, I don't understand why we didn't have somebody ready. Why in the world would you ever think you'd have to have somebody ready in the second inning after a guy basically has a very effective first? And he got ahead of three to four hitters. He walks one guy, and he's ahead of three or four hitters and retires all three guys he gets ahead of. There's just no – the gift of hindsight's a beautiful thing. But nobody in baseball is thinking after a first inning – a hitless and scoreless first inning, hey, let's go get some guys up in this heat and go ahead and kind of get guys hot for no reason. Nobody thinks that way. Again, it's easy to go back in hindsight and say, well, we should have had somebody ready. Nobody in baseball thinks along those terms, ever, ever. You can say whatever you want to defend your position, but you can rest in your wrongness. LeBron, you know, lines out to short, Petrus walks, and then Snell grounds out to third. And so So we're able to get out of it, but the damage is done there. I mean, it really is. You know, it's just part of the deal. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, Brooks Auger has thrown some big pitches for Mississippi State this year. He just didn't have it yesterday. And sometimes it's as simple as that. True story. All right, bottom of second, State attempts to kind of start chipping away here, and we have, have a base running blunder again that actually probably costs us a run. Hyzak sharply singles to left, and then Larry finds out the center. Hyzak gets picked off first base here. And that's part of baseball. It is. But it's happened too frequently. I'm just mean with him, but, everybody. Outs are precious. You want to make your outs at the plate, not on a base pass. And then Hyzak gets picked off here, and what do you know? Kohler hits a home run, an absolute shot into right field. So instead of it being a 4-2 game, it's a 4-1 game. Now, we can't just guarantee that because the pitching sequence may change, right? With a runner on, them having to hold the runner, you're trying to get a double play ball there. And so when you get the out, sometimes the pitching sequence changes. But nevertheless, it was a big play at the time because a 4-2 ball game in two innings, you feel a whole lot better about yourself. Pulling him in lines out to center field, and that ball was pretty well struck too. And I really thought that against Hess, we were barreling some balls up. It's not like he was, striking us out. We had a couple balls that we popped up through the first two innings, but it felt like we were finding barrels against him, and it just kind of felt like it's a matter of time. That's how it felt. Maybe you felt differently. We bring in Cole Cheatham here, and some people ask, why not bring in Cam Schulke? I'm a huge Cam Schulke fan. But Cam is a guy at times that struggles with lefties. And it's maybe struggles a strong word. But when you have a lefty up there, it kind of eliminates a little bit of the sidearm action because that ball is going to ride into the left-hander. It's kind of like the Riley Self years, right? You don't throw that cutter to left-handers. Similar situation. So with seven left-handers in a lineup, you bring in a left-handed pitcher. And so Cole Cheatham, who is a guy at times been a matchup guy for us, and for a couple of innings here, he actually pitched pretty well. And then you start thinking, hey, if we can ride him for a couple of innings and ride Luke Dotson for a couple of innings and give us a chance to catch up here, maybe we can get this ball game back. Well, he gets Hodo to strike out looking. Cassetti then gets on a fielding error here. You've got to make a play here. We get a routine ground ball to third. Well, that'd be not so routine. But we make a stop there, and then we airmail it to first, and it was not even close. Jarvis Bernardo could not have come down with this thing. It kicks off the padding there, goes into right field, and it goes around to second. But McCants flies out the center, and then Hamiter grounds out to second base. So despite the fact that we have a big error here, Cheatham pitched pretty well. And again, you go back and think, it should have been a 1-2-3 inning. Should have been. There's always a case of human error. But there's, again, no evidence here that suggests that Cole Cheatham isn't in a good spot. All right, bottom of third, we're still in the ballgame here, right? Powell singles to left field. Chance strikes out swinging. Mershon strikes out swinging. And then DJ, it's going to be an infield hit. And for some reason, Joe elects to try to take third. I don't get it. Because all of a sudden, you'd have had runners at first and third with Hunter Hines up. Time to run the plate. I don't know what Joe thought. I don't know if he thought that DJ was out. I don't know if he's thought, hey, I'll catch him asleep. But that was an absolutely terrible base running decision, and you basically end an inning that could have been promising. Because who knows, Hunter Hines may have struck out, Hunter Hines may have tapped back to the pitcher, or Hunter Hines may have doubled in the gap or hit a three-run bomb. But you have to give him the ability to swing. A lot of people would say, oh, that's coaching. Guys, this is a guy that's played baseball all of his whole life. He shouldn't have to be coached that, hey, stay at second or look for your third base coach, right? It's inexcusable. It is. It was a terrible mistake. We lived to fight another day, but those are the kind of – that's losing baseball. That gets you beat. It does, especially when you're – a lot of ball game left, but you're fighting from behind, even if you just get one back here. So, again, you cost yourself a run with the pickoff in the second. And you end an inning here unnecessarily and deny Hunter Hines, one of the hottest hitters in the country, a chance to swing. It's a terrible mistake. It is. Top of four, Cheatham back out on the bump here, and he gets a 1-2-3 inning. Evelyn grounds out to the pitcher, Grant grounds out to short, and then LeBron strikes out swinging. So all of a sudden, Cole Cheatham's coming here and got you a hold. You just need this offense to get going a little bit. Hines strikes out looking. Then Connor Hyzak's hit by the pitch. Larry ground the ball to shortstop that forced the runner at second, and he ends up stealing second, and then Kohler strikes out swinging on three pitches. So not a really good sequence here for Bulldog baseball. It's just not. needed more offensively in this ballgame. All right, top of five, we bring Cheatham back out. And I felt then, you know, hey, maybe we're pushing it a little bit here. And we were in some respects. Nothing against Cole Cheatham, but after he gave you two innings, again, he's given you no evidence that he's fading, but you probably should have somebody ready here just in case, because he hadn't pitched real deep in the ballgames. He hadn't pitched an awful lot. But I was proud of the effort. But top of five, and the Petrutz singles to center field. And again, we get ahead here. We get ahead 0-1 on a swing and strike. Getting a 2-2 count. He fouls a pitch off and he singles it. Then Snell hits the first pitch he sees through the left side. It's a ground ball to kind of a C&I single. And then we walk Hodo on four pitches. And that's the thing, too. It's lefty on lefty. You got to be more competitive there, because you got to think, you know, ground ball middle infield, you may be able to turn two here. But you got to give your defense a chance to make a play. We didn't make competitive pitches. We did come back here and strike out Gassetti swinging. So now you're a pitch away from getting out of it. We get the ground ball to third, and we boot it. I don't know if we'd have been able to get two there, but maybe we get an out. We get into a situation where perhaps that we hold them at just one run here. But instead, the ball gets through Logan Kohler, and two runs score to make it 6-1. So again, Cole Cheatham gets in trouble, gets an unproductive out, and then rolls up a ground ball, and we don't make a play. And that's been a rarity for us. It's true. We're going to be fair about it. But two ground balls in this appearance for Cole Cheatham, and we don't make a play, right? So I don't want anybody going out there thinking, well, Cole Cheatham is a bad pitcher. Cole Cheatham did his job, but some people behind him didn't. Now, he won't say that, but I'll say it. You know, it's part of the deal. It's part of the deal. But again, you know, he missed some spots and walked Hodo, so you know some of it's on him too, but it's a shared responsibility. It wasn't like Cole Cheatham just had a meltdown on the mound. Hamilton then singles back up the middle, and that's it. We bring in Luke Dodson, who came in and put the fire out, strikes out Eblen on three pitches, and gets Grant to strike out swinging. So three runs in the inning on three hits. They leave two on, but you know, the walk and the error both loom large here, right? Those runs proved to be a big deal later. Bottom of five, they bring in Myers for Hess, and he was really good, I thought. Pulliam fouls out the first, Powell grounds out the first, and Chance popped up to second base. Pretty efficient inning here, and not a single ball really out of the infield. I mean, Chance's pop-up drifted there into the right field grass, but it was, you know, wasn't a well-struck ball. Our top of six, Dodson singles. Dodson gives up a single to LeBron through the right side. And Petrus gets the bunt down, and we just can't make a play. Just kind of pushes that thing up the first baseline, and Dodson gets there. It's going to be a bang-bang play, and then we can't come up with it. True. Snell then grounds to second base. We force the runner. Now there's runners on the corner. We get Hodo to strike out looking here. Big, big, big out there. Because you get a non-productive out. So the runners can't move. And then Gassetti gets us, singles through the left side. Run scores, makes it 8-1. McCann strikes out swinging. Bottom of six, 1-2-3 inning for State. Marshawn flies out to left. Jordan grounds out the short. Hines grounds out the first. So again, you know, you go back and think about them bringing Myers in. You know, he retires the first six that he faces. And, you know, when you're trying to play catch-up, you can't have dead innings, and we did. Bring in Carson Ligon, top of seven. Hamiter lines out to center. Eblen grounds out to first, and Grant flies out to right. So not we got a hold here again. You know, the bullpen's been maligned at many times and sometimes deserving. But you know, when you got guys out there putting up zeros for you, you got to get the offense going. Bottom of seven, we kind of start trying to climb back into this thing. Hizak homers to center field, and what a shot it was. Larry goes down looking three pitches and looked at three strikes. Kohler then homers to center field, and that got, I mean, that thing hit up there by the crow's nest on the batter's eye. It was an absolute shot. One of the longest home runs I've seen hit in the new stadium. But again, it's another solo shot. So all three runs in this ball game for Mississippi State, solo shots. Solo home runs don't get you beat. It's walks and hit by pitches and two out hits get you beat. Pulliam flies out to center, and then Powell pops up to the third baseman. So it's an 8-3 ball game, and you start thinking, okay, we got six more outs to work with. They got a bullpen dealing with some food poisoning type stuff. Maybe not a lot of depth there. We'll see how things go. We come out and hit LeBron on a 3-0 count. It's tough. It is. Snell then, it's so funny. Petrus singles through the right side. LeBron goes around to third, and then it's an RBI sack fly. So Alabama does what winning teams do. They tack on. Hodo strikes out swinging. We bring in Cam Shulkey for Carson, and then we hit Gassetti. And then we bring in Tyson Harden, and he gets McCants to strike out swinging and a lengthy at bat there. But part of the deal, man, they bring in Davis, their closer, to try to get us. And it's pretty – you know, here's the thing, too. He throws 96, 97 from the left, but it's pretty flat. I mean, it truly is. And a lot of people, it's like they get enamored with, hey, that's a big number from the left side, and it is. But he's not a guy that I would really trust. And we've had some success against him in the past. But, you know, Bryce single through the left side. Mershon, it's ground ball back to the pitcher. We moved the runner along here. Jordan and doubles to left center. Hit that ball well. Chance comes around to score. Hines strikes out swinging. And then Hizak singles through the left side. And Jordan scores. So now it's a 9-5 ball game. And then we have a 30-minute rain delay. 41 total, counting having to come back out there and all that kind of stuff. So about 40 minutes. And I thought, wait, who does this favor? Well, Amani walks. And so now all of a sudden, you're in a really good situation here, right? You're in a really good situation here because you got bases loaded. And Logan Kohler, a guy that's been absolutely red hot coming up. Now the wind's blowing in here, but you're just thinking, you know, give me a double in the gap somewhere. We'll really make this thing interesting. Instead, we strike out swinging. And, you know, give the kid some credit for coming there, throwing some big pitches after having to sit for a while. We bring in Nolan Stevens. He gets hammered to strike out swinging. And then Edwin homers opposite field shot there to make it 10-5. Grant singles to left. LeBron singles to left. You know, just we're not missing many bats here. Then Petrus flies out to center. Runner tags and takes third. Snell then grounds out. Side retired. And then State, for the most part, goes quietly in the ninth. Pulliam flies out. Powell walks. And then Chance singles back up the middle. So, you know, got a couple runners on. And you start thinking, hey, if Mershon can get on and then you can get this thing around the Hines, you got a chance to make it interesting. But Mershon grounds out in a double play. You lose the ball game 10-5. But again, there's just so much to pick apart about this game. It's not one thing. We didn't pitch it exceptionally well. I didn't think we managed the pitching exceptionally well. I thought we really kind of pushed our luck a little bit with Cheatham, and nothing against him. Again, he had two quality innings. We didn't play good defense behind him. We had a couple of errors, both at third, and Logan Kohler has been really good for us this year at third. But we didn't make errors on Friday or Saturday. We do here, and they cost us. They do. They cost us. But there's a lot about this. You know, you look up and say we had 10 hits in the ballgame. Yeah, you also had a couple of base running blunders that likely cost you runs. So it's a total team loss. Like we always talk about, it's a total team win. We didn't get a good start. And again, I thought we pressed our luck a little bit with Cheatham. Not being critical of him, he was outstanding. Because again, he rolls up a couple ground balls that we don't make plays on, right? He does his job there, but couldn't get the big key hit at times too. So it's on pitching, it's on defense, it's on offense. And again, I thought I thought we probably should have made a move quicker before the game kind of got away from us there in the fifth. That's just my opinion. Maybe you see it differently, but again, give Alabama some credit that they very easily could have just laid down and gone to the house and, you know, got on a heating pad and text their girlfriends and went on to sleep with some Pepto-Bismol. But they came in here and played, and give them some credit. But the Bulldogs take the series. We're going to do a quick top 10 list, and we'll come back and talk about what it all means, and we got some more football stuff to talk about. All right, time to celebrate a new top 10 list brought to you, as always, by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair.com. You know the drill. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Nobody does it better than Blair. A lot of people doing a good job, but Blair's been doing this 23 years. And the reality of it is, Close with Blair is not just a catchy little website name. Top 1% close ratio in the country. You could entrust your mortgage into the hands of a lot of people. But don't overthink it. Just stick with a winner. Stick with Blair Chandler. Give him a call or text today at 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. You never know when life's going to throw you a curveball. You know, maybe you've got a change of life situation. Maybe you've got a job change, relationship change. I don't know. But you have to be prepared. And when life throws you lemons, go with somebody that can help you make some lemonade, right? Close with Blair.com. Whether you're looking for a game day condo, looking for your first home, or maybe a new home, that's the way to go. Close with Blair.com. All right, I don't know if you guys know this. One of my favorite albums of all time is Queensrÿche's Operation Mindcrime. I listen to it extensively when I travel. Listen to it in its entirety. And one of the things that I love about it, I've even listened to it when I float sometimes, is because of the fact it is basically a drama set to music. It's a concept album. And Queensrÿche, in many respects, was kind of unfairly maligned by some people. That they're just an 80s hair metal band. They were absolutely not that. They were so much different and in many respects more talented. Jeff Tate from Seattle has a 5-octave voice for a while, led the Opera Council out in Seattle, Washington. Michael Wilton, Chris DeGarmo with the greatest guitar harmonies perhaps of all time. Technically proficient on every instrument. Randy Jackson, an incredible bass player. Scott Rockenfield, of course, providing the drums. And they recently announced it's 36 years since that album was released a couple days ago. And I thought, well, you know, I want you guys to enjoy the majesty and magic of that album. And they did an Operation Mindcrime 2, which is really good, not as good as the original, but it kind of picks up where Mindcrime 1 leaves off. But here are my top 10 songs from that album, because every song in many respects could have been a single. Number 10 is a title track, Operation Mindcrime. And it basically comes early in the concept album. It's just kind of explaining to you, you know, hey, what's happening? You know, our Nicky, our main character, I dare call him the protagonist because he did some pretty nasty things. But he's kind of learning that these people are manipulating him, thus Operation Mindcrime. Number 9, Spreading the Disease. Basically, it's about Mary, another one of our characters, Nikki's girlfriend, that let's just say she worked in adult entertainment. And so that's really what the song is about. Number 8, Breaking the Silence. It's great. It's one of those songs, too, that's kind of buried. You know, you think about the hits on this album, but I think it's some of the best guitar work on the album. Number 7, Sweet Sister Mary. Beautiful song. It's one of those songs that it's elongated, too. And it's one of those, without this song, I don't know if we could fully develop the plot in the story. Number 6 is The Mission. Now, this is about the conflict in young Nicky's life. You know, he is involved in some nefarious things. He's trying to find a way to navigate through all this. And The Mission basically is about that aspect of it. You know, as he's kind of coming to grips with what he's being forced to do and what he wants to do. And of course, the big line that my mission saved the world and I stood ground. And it's one of those things too, that there's so many things going on in this, you're not exactly sure how things are gonna work out. Number 5 is basically an anti-drug song. It's The Needle Lies. But it's also one of those songs too, it's very up-tempo, and I think it's Jeff Tate, probably one of his shiny moments, not just on this album, but the entire Queensrÿche catalog. I remember when we saw them play in Jackson, Mississippi with Suicidal Tendencies open up. This was one of the highlights for me. Don't ever trust the needle because it lies. Number 4, huge hit for them, I Don't Believe in Love. And of course, this comes later in the album when Nicky has kind of reconciled the fact that he's going to have to do something he really doesn't really want to do. He's basically kind of disavowing his love for Mary in this. It's like the reality of who she has been and who she's trying to become. He has found some fault in all of that. And that's really what it's about. I don't believe in love. It's never worth the pain that you feel. There are a lot of people that feel that way. I mean, you get too close, you get emotionally invested, things don't work out, and breaking up's the hardest part, right? Because what happens is we fall in love with ideals. We don't really see our people that we love sometimes as human. We don't afford them the opportunity to make mistakes. And then they don't match the pedestal that we place them on, And it's really a it's kind of a self-induced pain in some respects. Not that people don't get mistreated. I've been mistreated too. It's true. But I still believe in love. Number three, and those of you that know this album, you're like, I know Steve is legit because he's saving a couple deeper tracks that are technically proficient in every aspect for the top three. One of those is our number three track. It's Revolution Calling. I absolutely love this song. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. And one of my favorite lines, even way back when this thing was released, was I used to trust the media to tell us the truth. But now I see the payoffs everywhere I look. Who do you trust when everyone's a crook? I mean, it's incredible poetry, but even now, it's so poignant. I mean, this album's written, 37, 38 years ago and released 36 years ago, and it's more true today than it was at its inception. It's absolutely true. And there's so many people, even in my industry, that are just complete and utter frauds, and they've become agent provocateurs and clickbait bandits that just write things that are sensational rather than just simply telling the truth just to get clicks, because clicks generate revenue. Revenue ends up in their pockets. And, I see people all the time that do this sort of stuff. Number two, if you remember Headbangers Ball, there was a time this was the soundtrack to the open of Headbangers Ball, and people didn't know what it was from. I think it's some of the best guitar work, not just on this album, but the entire catalog. It's speak to me, speak the word. We all want the words of truth, but it just kind of starts like a roller coaster. Like as soon as you get going, right out of the gate, it's like shot out of a cannon. It's just one of those songs, and pardon the pun, it really speaks to me. I think it's one of those songs too that it was maybe released later as a single, but I think there was a little bit of album fatigue at the time. But this album is an absolute masterpiece, and I think Speak is one of the shining moments. The number one song is probably the most recognized song not named Silent Lucidity for Queensryche. And for us headbangers and us hard rockers, it's the one that we all point to as saying this is really who Queensryche is and was. It's The Eyes of a Stranger. And that's how the album ends. And it's absolute insanity because I think you have to listen to, again, this album in its entirety because there's little asides in it. There's this drama and things like that that kind of go into the next song. It's basically a hard rock musical. And it has stood the test of time. There are people, like I'm really involved in some of these, 80s hair metal fan groups. And that's the one album that pretty much everybody can agree, maybe outside of Appetite for Destruction from Guns N' Roses. It's one of those albums that people are like, I still listen to this regularly. And that's the thing, too. There's a lot of music from that era that comes out really dated. This is not one of them. And Eyes of a Stranger, absolutely a phenomenal piece. And really a great close to the album. And, of course, there's this airy thing at the end, when I remember now. It's like our main character, Nikki, is kind of coming to the realization of what's happened and how he's been used. And to see this thing played out live on stage when Queensryche was really at the height of their popularity was something I'll never forget. I've had people ask me all the time, Steve, you've been to hundreds of shows. What's the best show you've ever been to? And it was that Queensryche show in Jackson, Mississippi. And I have been all over it. I've seen so many great bands. I've seen so many people play their hits at their zenith. But this is the one I just felt like it was so next level. And, of course, that was on the Empire / Operation Mindcrime tour. So we had, Jet City Woman and Another Randy Knight, Silent Lucidity mixed in, but the set list was incredible. But they basically played this in its entirety. And, the new album is out, and I really like that one too. But it's not the same without Rockinfield and Michael Wolton and Jeff Tate. But love Queensryche. I just wanted to celebrate that album today. We had some other suggestions, but I have spoke extensively about this album before, and I wanted to kind of rank the songs in my estimation. And those of you that were fans back then, and let me be honest with you about that too. Like, Queensryche didn't always resonate, with the Poison, Motley Crue, Rat crowd. And I think a lot of it's because the lyrical content wasn't nothing but a good time. And it's not to say that those weren't great, but this was a much more serious band that wrote a lot more about social issues. And I don't think a lot of people were prepared for that. It's like, not, Steve, I just want to get a beer and find a good-looking chick, right? I mean, so this band was kind of the thinking fans band. And that's one of the reasons they're still making great music and still selling out concert venues around the country, is because of the fact people remember them. And it's like, you go listen to the song Empire, absolutely phenomenal. And it talked a lot about how much money we wasted on space exploration instead of law enforcement and things of that nature. It's like, so much of this, the Queensrÿche in many respects, were not just a product of their time. I think they were actually ahead of their time. And I think that's one of the reasons they hold such a soft spot in the hearts of people that that love rock music. But again, it's an album that has stood the test of time. If you're unfamiliar with it, let me suggest you put it on. Maybe when you're traveling and you've got some time to kill, maybe you're riding by yourself and you don't have somebody talking to you that interrupts and you're like me, you just want to crank it. Just put this album on and just click play and just turn it up and let the music kind of take you in. Not only will it entertain you, I think it may even actually educate you a little bit. So Operation Mindcrime from Queensrÿche. That's our selection of the day. Hope you enjoy the list. And as always, check in with closewithblair.com. We've got to hustle and get out of here if we can get out of here on time. So we're going to go quickly. Campus Bookmart, your next segment brought to them by them. I love Campus Bookmart. They're a tremendous place to do business. They've been selling Mississippi State merchandise forever and a day. They're an institution. And if you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, look no further than Campus Bookmart. Yeah, you can get on Amazon. You might find some cool stuff. It's not always going to be officially licensed. It's not always going to be exactly what you want. But Kathy Brown does such a great job buying merchandise and kind of setting you guys up for success, whether you're looking to re-outfit yourself, update your wardrobe, decorate your fan cave. Maybe you've moved into a new place. You want to get that Mississippi State welcome mat, or perhaps you've got a recent Mississippi State graduate. You can find great diploma frames at Campus Bookmart. And every graduate needs one of those. It's a great grandparent or favorite aunt and uncle gift. The great diploma frame, right? And you can find such a wide selection there at Campus Bookmart. If you can't make the town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That saves you shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a look back at the weekend that was. Tennessee goes to Florida, wins the series. We expected that. Vanderbilt goes to Georgia and gets swept. We didn't expect that, not to mention Georgia run rules Vanderbilt. Did we break Vanderbilt? I think we did. If nothing else, we've got a lot of breathing room now between us and them. Arkansas goes to Kentucky. I'll be honest with you. I thought Kentucky would take the series, but I wasn't really confident in the pick because Arkansas is really good, but it's so tough to win on the SEC road. So you had the battle of the SEC frontrunners that goes the way of Kentucky. I texted Nick Mingione yesterday, let him know how much I appreciated him and how proud I was of him. Because, again, a lot of people thought Kentucky would be pretty good last year. Maybe not a lot of people. We did. I didn't think they'd be as good as they are this year. So last year, Nick saves his job, and here he is shortly after signing a huge contract extension, leading the Southeastern Conference alone with 2 weekends to play. Did you expect that? They've only won one SEC championship in our history. And that was with John Cohen. Went from worst to first that year. And so now here's Nick Mingione on the verge of clinching an SEC championship, and they control their own destiny. And they got a game up on everybody. Alabama, of course, goes to Mississippi State, drops 2. We wish we would have swept there, but it is what it is. South Carolina goes to Missouri. Missouri, it seemed like yesterday Missouri was going to pull that series out, but bullpen lets them down. South Carolina comes back to win. 2-1 in the series. Ole Miss goes to Auburn. I don't know if you saw how that game ended yesterday. Ole Miss wins the first two. I really thought that Friday game, I thought that Auburn got squeezed a little bit there in the ninth. Maybe it was a Saturday game. It all runs together after a while. But last night, Ole Miss walk-off wild pitch for Auburn. And, Ole Miss certainly needed that series. They got A&M and LSU left. But it seems like Ole Miss should probably be okay getting to Hoover. They're not going to get into a regional unless they probably win the SEC tournament. A&M goes to LSU. I thought A&M would take the series, but it's so tough to go play at LSU in May. It just is. And it really speaks to what we did last year with not one of our better teams. We go down there and beat the eventual national champions in their own backyard with a wild Sunday game. A&M goes down there. LSU up early in the Sunday game, and A&M comes storming back to salvage a game. So, Steve, what did that do to the standings? Well, that's a good question. Really good question. Mississippi State currently 18 in the RPI, according to the latest update, and it depends on which RPI you use. But in the West, Arkansas, 17-7 record. A game back of them is A&M at 16-8. And again, those two are going to play the final series of the regular season next week. It's going to be a big, big series. It'll be a nationally televised series. So there'll be a lot going on there. Now, we're three games out of first. We don't expect to catch Arkansas. Now, it'd be great if we did. Not expecting that. But Mississippi State now all alone, again, in fifth place in the SEC and third in the West. So if the tournament started today, Mississippi State would be the 5 seed, which wouldn't give us that big bye. We'd love to have that. But four games behind us with six to play is Alabama at 10-14. So you start thinking about what does that mean in the landscape of things, Steve? Well, we're four games up on them, five games up on LSU and Ole Miss with six to play. So it appears that State should be in a good position to hang on to third in the West after being picked seventh in the West. And if you go back and look in recent history, you know, you've usually have had 6-7 SEC teams host, and we still have possibility to do that. We do. There's some teams ahead of us in the RPI that have no chance of hosting. But we got to go take care of business. We got to go at least get one at Arkansas. And, of course, even just playing Arkansas will help the RPI. And then you've got to take care of business against Missouri. Auburn, 4-20 now in the league. They could have been mathematically eliminated over the weekend, but the win over Ole Miss, you know, keeps it going for another week. On the East, and again, the SEC-leading Kentucky Wildcats are 18-6. Tennessee, a game back at 17-7. Georgia, 13-11. South Carolina, 13-11. Now, that's important because of the fact that State's a game ahead of both teams for fifth. We really need to stay ahead of them. Now, of course, State would help hold the tiebreaker over Georgia, who can get hot. We don't play South Carolina, you know. So you look at that and you say, okay. All right. And then you look at your three games ahead of Vanderbilt, again, with six to play, which probably prevents Vanderbilt from hosting, to be quite honest with you. I mean, no matter what your RPI is, you can't be seventh or eighth place in your conference and expect to host no matter what the RPI is. It's not just an RPI-based model. Florida now 6-10-14. A lot of people thought Florida would contend this year. I did too, to be honest with you. And in Missouri, 7-17. So if the tournament started today, Auburn and Missouri are out. Now, Ole Miss and LSU are tied for the last spot. Both of them two games ahead of Missouri. And so when you start working through the schedule here, you start thinking, okay, every pitch matters. Every game matters. So let's take a look at what the week looks like. You know, because we're, you know, hey, we're not playing baseball again until we head to Fayetteville. And again, I'll be there. It's what we do. You know, we cover Mississippi State home or away. I can't speak for anybody else, but that's what we do. And we're excited to do it. We feel like it's our responsibility to do it. All right, let's take a look at real quickly at the week we expect it to be. We're going to get some football stuff out of here. We may go a few minutes over. You guys won't mind. All right, looking at it. So, would somebody fix the SEC website? Is it too much to ask? Do I need to get dialed up and get on my MySpace account to make sense of all this? It's so stupid. Just fix it, guys. Just fix it. Fix it, please. It's nuts, man. It is, and you know it is. It used to be so easy. You just go click on schedule and it tells you today's games and you could scroll to the next day. It was great. No, not anymore. All right, so we're not playing in the midweek, and I think which bodes well for us headed to Arkansas. Now, Arkansas, done with midweek games too. We got one more scheduled next week for North Alabama, and I'm praying for rain. All right, but Tuesday night, Kentucky will travel to Xavier. South Carolina is going to play Winthrop. Queens will play Tennessee. I can only begin to imagine what that does for your RPI, but you know, Tennessee's fine. Auburn goes to Georgia Tech. South Florida is at Florida. Alabama's at Troy. And I'm going to be honest with you, I won't be the least bit surprised Troy wins that game. They're not a team that I think people want in their regionals. I'm just kind of saying it for what it is. I don't know if they win one, but I think they could wreck somebody's regional. Louisville will go to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt really, really hurting these days. Rice goes to A&M. Remember when that used to be a big deal? Yeah, because Rice was part of the NBA, the need-based aid league. They were doing the Vandy Tulane thing for a while. And now here we are. They don't do it anymore. And now they're just another team. Northwestern State will beat OSU. Murray State's at Ole Miss. That's a Wednesday game. And then we get into some SEC play. And so we talked about the Georgia-South Carolina thing, right? Georgia and South Carolina play this weekend. So our rooting interest, right, is going to be Georgia. Number one, because of the fact we own two wins over Georgia. So the better their RPI is, the better our RPI is. Also, two, we hold the tiebreaker over them. So even though we're a game up, let's say we take one, they take two. Even though we'd be tied in the standings, we would hold the tiebreaker going into the final weekend. That's your rooting interest there. Kentucky's at Florida. You got to like where Kentucky is. You know, Florida's tough down there at their place. But Kentucky, you kind of get a sense they feel it. And if they go down there and get that series from Florida, they could be in a situation they're two games up with 1 weekend to play. LSU's at Alabama. This Alabama offense is really good when they're healthy. But LSU is a tough team to play. That's going to be a tough series for Alabama. Auburn is at Missouri. And you got to think Missouri's thinking, hey, this is our chance to stay alive, right? And the truth of the matter is, you know, if they get eliminated, let's say Auburn finds a way to go win that series and Missouri is then basically eliminated from Hoover, you know, what do they feel like when they show up here? Is everybody just kind of ready to go play? You know, go get out and do summer vacation, go play up in the Cape. Tennessee's at Vanderbilt. So Vanderbilt loses the series to Mississippi State, gets absolutely destroyed by Georgia, and their reward is to welcome the Tennessee Volunteers. The number one ranked Tennessee Volunteers. Texas A&M's at Ole Miss. And so when you start thinking about that whole tiebreaker with LSU and Ole Miss, certainly favors LSU because I think they're a legitimate chance to be a road winner this week. And that Ole Miss is going to have to take on A&M, that one of the better offenses in the country. But, you know, Mike Bianco always seems to find some magic in May. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, yeah, every game matters. Again, every game matters. Every pitch matters. So we're going to be doing some scoreboard watching. And, listen, we got a difficult draw this week. Going up there to see an Arkansas team that, you know, had a chance to kind of take control of the SEC race. They lose a series and they come home now having to play a Mississippi State team playing pretty well. Also of note too, you may have seen Arkansas announce Dave Van Horn said today that two of their pitchers are out for the year. We were not expected to see either of them this weekend. One hadn't pitched in forever and the other one's been primarily a midweek pitcher. So it has really no bearing on our season, but we always hate to see young men go through that kind of injury. One quick look at the final weekend, and we won't spend a lot of time on this because we got to do some football stuff before we get out the door. Florida's at Georgia. You got to favor Georgia there, right? Which is so important for us to take care of Missouri, right? But South Carolina's at Tennessee. And so when you start thinking about positioning, Georgia takes a series this weekend. You got to feel good about Tennessee being home against South Carolina. So South Carolina, two very difficult series here in the final two weekends. I think it's going to be difficult for them to catch Mississippi State. Vanderbilt's at Kentucky. That's a tough one, obviously, for Vanderbilt. They're going to be playing for something, probably trying to stay in the hosting conversation. But after this weekend with Tennessee, you got to wonder what team shows up in Lexington. That's a very, very difficult draw down the stretch. Alabama's at Auburn. You got to feel like Alabama probably feels like, hey, we're playing LSU, who's battling for the final spot in Hoover at our place. And then we go to Auburn, who will be eliminated. It's a rivalry series, you never know. Ole Miss, of course, goes to LSU, Missouri to State, and then Arkansas at A&M. So a lot of intrigue, but again, I just kind of want to go over, I think this whole thing, this number five spot in the SEC is going to boil down between Georgia and Mississippi State. Simple as that. And I think Georgia's in a good position to win both of those series. We just don't need them to sweep anybody. We're okay with them winning the series in South Carolina. I'd love for Florida to get them in that final series, but you got to feel like right now Georgia's probably going to win the last two series, which would give them at least four wins. So we need to win at least three to maintain pace, right? Because in a tie, we would be the five seed they would be the six. That's important to understand as we get into all this. Okay, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and you'll find out everything you need to know about. Booking options will come up. Their Facebook page will come up, and then you can kind of peruse through the pictures and see the amenities that are available to you just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Kind of tucked away, conveniently located, but also well off the road, gives you a chance to have some peace and quiet. You got one neighbor out there, so we don't want you throwing a raver. We want you to respect your neighbors. But if you're looking for peace and quiet and a great place to bring a large group to town, there's not a better place than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Some friends of mine have used it as part of a work trip. They were kind of coming up here working around in multiple counties. Everybody stayed there. You got back, kind of rallied and had your game plan. You went out, you did your stuff, came back, had dinner. You got a full service kitchen there. You can stock that refrigerator. State of the art appliances there. Got that great wet bar, that huge back porch area, even a fire pit. So after a long day's work or a day at the ball yard, you can go sit out there and have you a cold one, just kind of sit around the fire. And just something about even in the summertime. You know, maybe you don't want to get the fire raging, but it's just something about sitting around, just kind of chewing the fat with friends and family. Or maybe you're bringing a family to town. Maybe you're here for all weekend. You say, Steve, I'm booking this for the regional. Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'm booking it. I'm going to bring everybody in. And even if we end up getting a road regional, I'm going to keep it because I want my family together as we watch this. Maybe we're not going to travel. And you have grandma make those cinnamon rolls for breakfast every morning. How great would it be to have all the grandkids, all the kids, all under one roof for a couple days. Whether it's a staycation, whether it's a guy's weekend, a girl's weekend, work trip, whatever, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse is the move for you. Now, I can save you a little money if you're serious about this, and you should be. When you get ready to book, you can book through Airbnb, you can book through VRBO, or you can book through the Evolve website. If you book through Evolve, promo code BSR10 will save you 10% off your stay. So again, you're saving money just by being a listener to this show. We encourage you to do that. Recently had one of our Bulldog football players use this place for their draft party. How about that? Just had everybody together, had a good time. And so you can, maybe you're not getting drafted, but maybe you just want to get your family together and have a great time and have everybody under one roof, right? That's the best way to go. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right. So we picked up another commitment over the weekend. And I want to kind of bring you up to speed on kind of where things stand, okay? That's what you want to know, right? That's what you're paying me for, is you want to be abreast of what's happening. Mississippi State now is down to just one scholarship available. Now, that said, that understood, I'm told there may be a guy going on medical. We'll see. But Trent Hudson, wide receiver from New Mexico State, is now committed to Mississippi State. We've got, you want to read his comments about his visit and his commitments, you can find that on the front page of jeanspage.com. It's a free article. It's also on all of our social media feeds. You should probably like us on Facebook anyway, just so the latest Mississippi State news shows up on your Facebook feed, and certainly follow us on Twitter. But it's kind of an interesting deal, right? I mean, you add another receiver, and it's another weapon. This guy was incredibly productive, and a guy that's got connections to Cliff Odom, of course, from his time there at New Mexico State. But we still got to get an edge. Now, by Job, and it may be Joby, and I apologize to the family if it is, and I'm told he is going to announce his decision no later than tomorrow night. It's Tuesday night. It appears Mississippi State and Kansas are the front runners. It was a big move over the weekend to try to get him to cancel the visit to Mississippi State. Kansas was unsuccessful in doing that. He did come in and visit and had a great time, right? So we'll see. We absolutely need him. Absolutely need him. We have worked extensively in the portal since Jeff Lebby got here to try to find an edge and have been unsuccessful. Number one, finding the guy that has the ability to play here, and number two, that wants to come. We got a lot of guys that would love to come that may not make us better as a football team, and that's just a wasted scholarship. There are a lot of other guys out there that we've chased and just haven't been able to get in the game with. We're in the game here. This is a guy who was highly recruited out of high school. And so we feel like we've got a good chance there, but kind of is what it is right now. We're just kind of waiting for him. He had the opportunity, of course, to come in and kind of get to know everybody. And then we'll see. Now, Montre Miller, cornerback from West Virginia, was also in over the weekend. I feel like between Montre Miller and Kobe Miner out of Indiana, we're going to get one of those two. And I think you get one of those two this weekend. Now, Miner was supposed to be a one-day deal, ends up being a two-day deal. And so I feel like, hey, you may add two more portal players late. If Joe Belek's not to come, I think you just kind of go with what you have. You take a corner and you're done. But we're at a situation now that there are so many guys out there in the portal, but the talent pool is for the most part pretty much drained. But State really needs another corner. So between Miller and Miner, I expect one of those two to be a Bulldog. Now, State was also chasing Deshaun Jones from Wake Forest. Matt Zenitz broke the news yesterday. It looks like he's going to stick with Alabama. There was talk about him taking a visit here this week. Those plans are off, and so we fully expect at any point, if he hadn't already, announcing for Alabama. But State kind of targeting about four guys here late for one spot, and you're able to get two guys to come in and take the official visit. And so now you got a decision to make, kind of waiting this thing out. So I think this week you'll get the portal news because we expect Job to announce on Tuesday, and I think one of these corners will be right behind that. And then I think you're done with the class of 2024. That's how it feels. That's how it looks. And then that'll be all the portal talk we have until we get into December. And I know many of you are got portal fatigue. Now, the good thing is that it gives us the ability to kind of rebuild a roster that needed an influx of talent. It does. And I know many of you are just tired of all this. It's like, Steve, I don't understand. And I'll be honest with you. I didn't see enough wrong with the previous system anyway. Right? And what I mean by that is I had no problem with a guy transferring and sitting out a year. Because of the fact, I mean, you know, like when you make a commitment, you make a commitment. And not to mention, you get a free year of school. And I think it's really shown a shift in many respects. We talk about student athletes. It's no longer really a student athlete when it comes to football. It's all about athleticism. It's all about trying to make as much money as we can for many kids, and then also to trying to put ourselves in a position that we can get to the National Football League. I begrudge no one anything. But when we had situations in the past where a guy transferred and it's like, you know, hey, this guy didn't play here, and maybe he's going somewhere else and has a chance to play, so we'll just sign off on a waiver. We're okay. And that's the thing that I've always thought that's so stupid. The NCAA really shouldn't be involved in the waiver process. You know what I mean? Like, say, for an example, you know, we had some basketball kids a couple years ago under Ben Howland that we signed. We were excited about them. We get them here. It just wasn't working out. And so they wanted to transfer. And so whether it be to UAB or, you know, Waxahachie Tech, if Ben Howland is okay with that kid being immediately eligible, and you know the receiving school would be, then the NCAA shouldn't have a decision to make. Why are they even involved in that process? If I say, you know what, hey, this kid was a great kid. He just wasn't good enough to play here. We want him to have an opportunity to play elsewhere. So let him go to UAB and play. Right? What was wrong with that? And he would have immediate eligibility. But instead, we've opened his Pandora's box and we've attached NIL to it. And I know it's a get off of my lawn type moment, but it's a mess. Now, again, a lot of discussion about basically what's going to serve as a collective bargaining agreement on the way. Maybe a year or two before we get it done, so don't stop your donations or anything like that, but it's a different dynamic. But the positive side of this is you get guys, you know, like Makai Polk, right? You get a guy like him that comes in kind of underutilized at Cal. He shows up and he sets a school record here. So that was a good move for him and for us. Kind of makes Cal look a little silly. You know, but when you start running through the numbers here, I mean, hey, I don't begrudge anybody a chance to improve their standing in life. And there are a lot of people, too, that are kind of late bloomers. You know, maybe they go sign with Eastern Kentucky. And the next thing you know, they find a weight room and they get super committed. And next thing you know, they're playing above maybe their signing level. And it's like, well, hey, I want to go play in the SEC. Well, now you've got the right to do that. I'm completely okay with that. I get that aspect of it. But I think we have basically taken a step in the wrong direction where it's like there is no longer a situation where a coach kind of knows, you know, who his team's going to be. That's why these transfer portal windows were so important. You know, I've had some coaches, some of your coaches have told me, I'm not going to change the way I coach and live in fear of the portal. You know, if we're going to coach our kids and we're going to hold them accountable, and if they don't want to be here because of the way we coach or the way that we enforce our policies, then it probably will be misevaluated them anyway, right? And I'm not going to name a name, but, you know, after the big fight that we had down at the Armed Forces Bowl, you know, we had a kid that, you know, was involved in some of that post-game melee stuff. And, you know, we told him what his penalty was going to be. And he goes, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be suspended. I'll just go get in the portal. And we said, take the train. And he did. You've got to be able to coach people. You got to be able to hold them accountable. And so that's part of this thing, too. I don't think you can coach scared. I think people who coach scared get beat. But all that understood. That's going to wrap up our show today. But again, so when we get back together on Wednesday, I expect that we'll have one, maybe two more portal commitments, and then we'll kind of move on from that, right? And of course, the spring portal, not nearly as active as the December portal, but we want to make sure that you guys are fully abreast of what's going on. We'll have all the updates over at jeanspage.com. Be sure and come check us out and join in the discussion. We're doing some things. I'm having some fun over there on the baseball board. Let's play a game of should I host, and I'm kind of giving the resume of a team. Because if you do the blind resume, sometimes you think, oh, well, you know, this particular team's ranked in the top 10. And then you look in the numbers and you see they got a strength of schedule outside of the top 50, and they've lost like five of their last 10. You got to look at total body of work, though, Steve. Well, that's true, too. And then you go back and look at the fact their non-conference schedule is not much better than ours, and everybody's assuming this school should absolutely host, right? So we're having some fun with that. And so come be a part of that. We'd love to have you as a member at jeanspage.com. Nobody covers Mississippi State sports like we do, especially baseball. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.